You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, our guest says when we're online, we should think before we like. He shares advice on navigating social media when we want to be conscious, safe, and aware of our media consumption habits. Right now, after the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Florida, young people have been the most visible advocates for gun control. They're also talking about the issue in new ways. Our next guest says that by using unapologetic rhetoric and bringing racial issues into the discussion, those in the Never Again movement are bringing new life to the gun control movement. George Zornick is the Washington editor for The Nation. His recent cover story for the magazine is called How the Never Again Movement is Disrupting Gun Politics. George, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Well, you write that one of the major ways the Never Again movement, led by students from the school in Florida, you say they're changing the conversation about guns by talking about race and including people of color who have been affected by these issues. Talk about how that's working.
Yeah, you know, there's always been this kind of disconnect or awkwardness about the gun control discussion that we've had over the past few years, because it really sprang up only after the Newtown shooting. So as I'm sure you remember, for many years, Democrats were loath to talk about gun control of any kind. There were not the kind of big, heavy-hitting gun control groups here in Washington up until the Newtown shooting, give or take. And that shooting very understandably galvanized a lot of people into action. You know, all of a sudden, President Obama became this gun control crusader after not mentioning it. I mean, he literally never mentioned gun control at all while he was running for president in 2012. So the awkwardness about that was that, you know, for many years or decades, gun violence had been claiming the lives of Black and Brown Americans without much of a peep from Washington and from politicians. But you know, all of a sudden they were galvanized by some of these mass shootings that were happening in suburban schools and shopping malls and movie theaters. And no question those were horrific events, and no question that a lot of the people who have been pushing for gun control care about it in all aspects. But the fact of the matter is that if you are a Black American, you are 13 times more likely to be killed by a gun than a white American. And that was something that was just kind of missing from the gun control dialogue. So what's so interesting to watch about these kids from Parkland is they've really taken that head on. So not just as an aside or as a kind of a throat clearing to talking about the mass shooting that they experienced, but they, you know, if you watch the March for Lives, they had a lot of people from Chicago and from here in D.C., who had experienced gun violence routinely in their communities. I covered an event here in Washington before the march, which got a ton of media coverage. The Parkland kids came up a few days early, and they went to a high school here in Southeast Washington that experiences quite a bit of gun violence. In fact, this school was only 400 students, and two students had been killed this year since classes began in September by gun violence. And so they were trying to highlight that, look, this is not just a problem that we periodically have to deal with when a mass shooting comes up on the news. It's something that Americans are living every day in certain areas, and that's something we have to confront head on.
Well, I want to give a listen to that event. Students from Parkland and students from the Thurman Marshall Academy in Washington, D.C. Here's a listen to Lauren Renford from Thurman Marshall and David Hogg from Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School.
The students from Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School lost 17 members of their community in one deadly shooting. We have too lost just as many friends and family members to gun violence. It is our shared grief of our loved ones that we stand united in this call to action.
The media focus on school shootings and oftentimes be biased towards white privileged students. Many of these communities are disproportionately affected by gun violence, but they don't get the same share of media attention that we do.
Talk about that media attention. There's been some criticism that students of color have been advocating on these issues in the past. I haven't gotten the attention that the Never Again movement at Parkland from Parkland has.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's been a little bit of an undercovered aspect of the Black Lives Matter movement that we have seen spring up in the past few years, which certainly has been covered, although I would say not quite to the degree and not with the uniform positivity that the Parkland kids have. But their critique was not just the violence that they experienced at the hands of police officers, but the daily grind of violence that was affecting their neighborhoods. And so, you know, I think David Hogue and his colleagues from Parkland were wise to point that out. You know, I was at that rally, and there was a little bit of an awkward situation where, you know, David Hogue had given that great speech and delivered that line that we just heard, and then he had to leave a little bit early because he had a packed schedule, and the crush of media cameras kind of followed him out of the auditorium while the Thurgood Marshall students were still talking. So surely it's not going to be, you know, an overnight lesson, but I do think the conversation is starting to shift towards really people really understanding how many lives are taken every day in this country by guns and who is disproportionately affected by that violence.
George Zornick is with us, Washington editor for The Nation, talking about his piece, How the Never Again Movement is Disrupting Gun Politics. In addition, George, to covering racial issues, you say that the rhetoric is different and kind of more cuts to the chase than a lot of traditional gun control activism.
Yeah, so, you know, like I say, what's so important to understand about the gun control movement is that it's so young and really in its current form, born after Newtown. And what that meant was that it was naturally going to be kind of small C conservative and consensus building to start, because it came about in a moment where you had a president that was willing to sign gun control legislation. You had a Senate that was controlled by Democrats, though they lacked 60 votes. And then a House that was controlled by Republicans, but the polls said that people want some of these things like background checks and smaller magazines. So the movement, when it was born right after Newtown, was immediately focused on like, okay, what are the trade-offs here? What can we immediately get through this system, which is controlled by both Republicans and Democrats and pro-gun politicians and people who favor gun control. So it was always going to be natural that once Barack Obama left office and was replaced by Donald Trump, who absolutely under no circumstances will sign any kind of major gun control legislation, that the movement was going to start to expand its horizons. They were going to stop talking about just what can we get through the House of Representatives with 219 votes or whatever, and thinking about, well, what are the maximalist positions that would really change the tide of stem the tide of gun violence in this country. So I think people expected that, but they did not expect that on top of that, the biggest advocates for gun control are these kids, which have just cut through the dialogue in such an interesting way, in part because I think they understand social media and media writ large in a way that a lot of adults don't, and I include myself in that. I mean, I'm 35 years old, but I am amazed by what some of these kids have been able to do on social media and the way that they've changed the conversation. And I think, too, there's this interesting mix of like, and I don't mean this as a criticism at all, but, you know, you're 17, 18, you think that you have kind of the solutions to all the problems that you see, and you're not afraid to just say, this is what should be done, and this is what we need to do. And I think the gun control movement was lacking that. And so I think that's, in one way, they've given it such a huge boost.
Do you see this movement having an impact, maybe not at the federal level yet, but in actual legislation at the state level?
Yeah, I think that's always been the story of gun control post-Newtown, is that, you know, federal change more or less remains elusive. But at the state level, particularly after these mass shootings, there has been some movement. I mean, even down in Florida, you know, that's a state legislature controlled by Republicans, heavily influenced by the NRA. They passed some measures after the Parkland, the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas shooting. Certainly not what the activists were pushing for, not a full accounting of that, but, you know, things that the NRA really didn't want, like raising the age for when you can purchase a weapon and strengthening some of the background check system there. So little by little, I think they're chipping away, and gun control activists understand, I think, that it's, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. It's not going to happen overnight, but by state by state kind of getting the change that they want, and on the national level kind of starting a more fulsome discussion about gun violence and what needs to be done, that they'll eventually get there. I don't mean to keep saying this, but look, the gun control movement really, as it exists now, is just, it's a very young movement here since early 2013. So I think too early to say, oh, they haven't achieved anything yet. I mean, I think they will.
What makes the difference between whether Never Again is in this debate for a marathon or in it for a sprint and then it kind of fades away?
Well, you know, part of it is just, as you know, from covering the news, particularly now in the age of Donald Trump, there's like six insane things happening at a time. I mean, last week there were like four or five stories that in any other time period that I remember would be huge, like 6 month long affairs. So they're kind of up against fighting for space and attention. Some of the grim calculus of the gun control movement is that mainly they are spurred on by mass shootings. And so there's been this terrible cycle of, you know, horrific violence, a few news cycles, some legislative change, and then it all recedes into the background, frankly, whether Trump is president or not. And then it comes back. And what's so interesting about what these kids are doing is the way that they're trying to really build an activist movement that is not de facto dependent on, you know, mass shootings to capture people's attention. I mean, at the March for Our Lives here in D.C., and I know the ones across the country, there was a very concentrated effort to register voters and get them out to the polls. They're building out the kind of activist networks that you see in other movements that I think they hope at least will be sustainable and kind of immune to the news cycle.
George, thanks for joining us today.
So good to be with you.
That's George Zornick, Washington editor for The Nation. We've been talking about his piece there called How the Never Again Movement is Disrupting Gun Politics.